Well, guys, I got two requests in the last week. The first one, I can probably give you. The second one, I don't think I can. First one was, get the bricks back. Come on, start recording in front of those bricks again. You're more bricks than, you know, Easter decorations behind you. So here I am, I got the bricks behind me, you know, the fireplace that you've all grown accustomed to. Request number two, get back to some hobby positivity. You've been Cage the curmudgeon Cage, and you've been too dark and too negative and too pessimistic, and got to get back to the hobby positivity. I said, when was I really hobby positive? And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to do it. So I came out here really looking to do it, right? I mean, I went to a card show yesterday. I drove my son about an hour in each direction, spent a couple hours at the show. Were there some positive? Sure. Got to meet some folks. Got to shake some hands, take some pictures, got to see some folks that I don't see too often. So Prism God and Wiz, those guys are the best. It's always fun talking to them. Got to see Black Jaded Wolf, got to talk to a lot of the dealers. Wax Stars, Marino was there making some deals. And, you know, the usual suspects. Got to see an aspect of the hobby that was alive. I went on Sunday, and a heck of a lot of Rangers there, CC Sabathia. And you know what's funny is, I'll paint with too broad of a stroke here, but people liked going there and meeting their heroes. They liked going there and meeting the Rangers and CC Sabathia and taking pictures, sort of like, you know, what I did with Ian the last time we were there. We met Sean Kemp. That's fun. It's a cool story. Nice little autograph. He got his jersey autographed that he was wearing, never selling it, right? And it got me thinking. There are two segments of people who came to that show. There are people who came to that show because they want to have an item in their collection that they want to own. And for the most part, that was the hobby autograph seekers for, you know, memorabilia. You know, the guys who wanted to see Lundqvist, the guys who wanted to see CC Sabathia, the guys who wanted to, you know, meet the Rangers. For the most part, you know, again, there's exceptions to every rule, but for the most part, those guys were going there to meet the hockey player and show him a picture or get a stick signed, or, you know, people walking around getting bats signed, and gloves and balls and pictures and photo opportunities. And those people do that. They wait online. They drive. They spend their time doing that. They enjoy it. They make a day of it. They bring their kids to it. And, you know, maybe they put that up on their wall. You know, maybe they hang the bat on the wall. Maybe they hang the picture on their wall. Maybe they, you know, they have that hockey stick and they show it to friends. And as I watched a lot of those people march in to, you know, meet their heroes, I also looked out over the general floor plan. And for the most part, again, except for the most part, I didn't see anybody going to a table at the show to buy something that they were looking to keep. I didn't see anybody going to the show looking to buy a card that they wanted for their collection. Now, I'm sure there are some there. I'm sure there are people who are out there looking for, you know, the Tom Seaver card that they're missing for their run. They've been searching for the last 30 years. I'm sure there's a few. But by and large, for the most part, the tables that are set up with cards from the last couple of years, cards that wildly fluctuate in value, cards that people are buying hoping to sell to someone else with the hope of selling it for more money, whether it's a young quarterback or a young quarterback or perhaps a young quarterback or maybe that young NBA star. We'll throw that in there also. I guess that's a potential, right? I saw a lot of, you know, hey, how much for that Trevor Lawrence? Hey, how much for that? How much for the Justin Fields? Didn't see a lot of people looking for Ohtani cards. But a lot of that back and forth. And what's funny is a constant refrain that I heard about the hobby. The damn repackers are killing it all. But it's funny because the same people who are saying the repackers are killing it are the folks who bring cards to give to those repackers earlier on in the show. I even heard somebody say to my son, who was walking around selling his cards, that the stuff that he had would have been perfect to sell to repackers, and that he should hold it to give it to them because they can't match what a repacker is going to pay. Think about that for a second. What that did was it made me think about the general space in and of itself, right? Because if we're comparing it to memorabilia, autographs, meeting your hero, something you want for that story, for that moment, so that you can keep it as a keepsake. It's going to have some nostalgia. It's going to be something you remember 10 years from now when I met CeCe Sabathia. As opposed to this Alperin Sengun or, Paolo Banchero or Jalen Hurts or whatever it is that you're just buying now with the hope that you're going to be able to sell it in a month or two. That Trevor Lawrence card that you think if you could buy for $1,000 now, when you bring it to the National this summer, people are going to be on Trevor Lawrence again because he's going to have a good year. You could sell it for $1,500. You're not buying that Trevor Lawrence card because you want to take it home and keep it forever and show it to your kids and pass it on. The repackers. Think about that for a second. I can't pay what a repacker pays. I said, all right, well, what's the fix? Well, it's an easy fix. Okay, well, tell me, what's the fix? The fix is easy. The price of wax has to come down. I said, well, that doesn't solve your problem at repackers. The price of wax comes down, it just does two things. Number one, it makes it easier for people to rip that wax, not get what they want, and give it to repackers, and the repackers are paying less. It's a vicious circle, right? And the reason why they say, hey, reduce the price was because the line that I heard was, these repackers, you're getting better value if you're a buyer, a hobby ripper, whatever you want to call yourself. You're getting better value for your money, a better return on your money if you buy into a repack than when you buy the product itself. So the product price has to come down. But like I say, that's just this. All right, the product price comes down. People are going to buy into that product. They're going to open it. They're going to get a card, and they're going to just sell it to the repacker. It's just more for the repack. And that cycle will continue until all of these cards are simply just recycled garbage. What are you chasing? What are you going after? And chase is an important word, because what are you chasing? Every chase card that's being put out there, it almost necessarily decreases in value every single time. Think about it. You have the repackers. You have the stuff that people are opening. They're trying to hit lotto. They're trying to hit these big things, right? Which card on the Fanatics 10 is a card that somebody wants to own forever? I'll wait. That's the thing about bounties. You have to put bounties on cards. You have to put bounties on it to get people to rip and open. You have to put bounties out there because the card itself is crap. Who wants Wemby's one of one from a baseball product where he drew on his own face? I'm sure there's three of you out there who are like, I'll take that. Yeah, because you're weird. I got some weird listeners. But ultimately, the person who wants that is someone who wants it so that they can cash in on that slot machine jackpot. And if you think I'm wrong, please replay recent history for yourself. What was the chase last month? It was the Bron Bronny one of one. And we were all championing that got pulled by who? It got pulled by a small shop, a collector in a small shop. His first Instagram post was him showing the card. I made a joke in my news that it was Mama Breaks. It wasn't Mama Breaks, but Mama Breaks will hit everything else. She's got that inside scoop, right? We're all thrilled it got pulled by a local store, and it's a great hobby. That thing was graded by PSA in negative time. The negative refractors, the frozen refractors, negative numbers. That thing was graded by PSA before it even got hit. And it was on PWCC even faster. The one before that was what? You guys remember? The Brady nonsense. Oh, let's find the Brady superfractor. That got pulled. Boom! It was sold in its own auction on Golden quick. Anybody take a look at those Brady cards? Those Brady gimmick cards? You see what those are selling for? Every time they sell, it's less and less money because we're on to the next gimmick. The Bronny gimmick is done. That was pulled off the 10 and replaced now by the Wemby. And the Wemby will get pulled, most likely by somebody on Fanatics Live, because they got 98% of the product or thereabouts. I'm rounding it. But I only see that product basically on Fanatics Live Breakers. I don't see too many people breaking that anywhere else. I'm sure maybe some folks got it, but kind of see where we're headed. So you can't really break. You can't really buy and sell. It's going to repackers, right? Repackers are creating their own repack product and making it hard for the flippy dippy dealers to flippy dip because they can't buy at a show at a reasonable price to make their money because the repackers are just buying at a higher price to put in a repack and sell. The products themselves are almost geared towards that repack because what is in it that you actually want to keep? Seriously, who's buying the products to hold anything that's being made? What's being put in there that people are going to hold? That's not it. The goal is to open the product, pull that lottery ticket out of it, that golden ticket, and sell it as fast as you can because the longer you hold on to it, the less it's going to be worth. Sell it and sell it fast. So what are we doing here? And the sad part for me is this. Like everybody else, I've gone in and out of the hobby, been collecting since the 80s. But there's times, right? You go to college, you're in law school, you get your first job. I'm buying cards here and there, but never really like. Then I did the UFC cards for a long time in 2009 to 2015. Took a little bit of a break, 15 to 17, 17 come back in. I remember when I came back in before COVID, and a lot of you came back in during COVID or right around that time for the same reason. I remember saying to myself, you know what? I have some money now. There's a nostalgic draw. What am I going to buy? What do I want to own? And I wanted to own the cards that I couldn't own when I was a kid. That Don Mattingly rookie card. That Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. The things that held some draw for me, that had some nostalgia. What has that now for these kids? What are kids going to come back 20 years from now into the next boom cycle? Because it's going to be flat down until then. What are they going to buy? What is it now that they're going to want to own? It's not the Prizm Gold cards that all the rich people are hoarding and telling you that that's what they should go after. Is it a Kaboom? Maybe. Are there one or two random things? Maybe. That 20 years from now, kids will see, you know, search out? Maybe. But 99% of the rest of the stuff is basically being print to dump, to repack, to buy, to repack and recycle and reheat like a TV dinner. 99% of the stuff that's out there in these products is trash. And you guys can heat it up. You can, you know, talk a good game. Hell, look at my post today. You can put on Disney princess dresses to get people to sell it, to get people to come in and get in those breaks. You can talk a good game. You can tell people to meet you over on the app. I'm going live. We're pulling heat. We're getting great stuff. Bang! We can yell about it. You can dress it up, you can put some lipstick on it, but it's still a pig. And it's a sad conclusion that we've come to. Sad. And trust me, I can talk about this because every Friday I still open hot, warmed over garbage with my son. Because I want to open something with him every Friday. Because that's fun. Every Friday I'm disappointed. Every time we open, I'm disappointed. Except when he opens Pokemon, because we're not really looking for anything. It's, oh, that one's shinier than that one. Wonderful. Maybe there's something to be said there. Maybe Pokemon will be what people are nostalgic for in 20 years. Maybe the TCG stuff. Who knows? Because I can tell you this. My son graduates college and gets a job and has money. He's probably not going to be chasing the RPAs of Alperen Sengun. Or whatever fifth level QB, Mac Jones, elite, slash, whatever the hell product is released next week. Probably not going to be chasing that. Not going to be much nostalgia for that, other than remembering how you lost your shirt on it. Who's going to want to chase that? Anyway, it's an interesting, you know, thing, because I did an episode last week about how the Instagram space is not real life, and that you got to go out to a show and, you know, enjoy that. And that is definitely true. It's definitely true. You know, talking to folks, interacting with folks, in-person deals, you know, one dealer, a piece of the game, brought a box that my son was looking for that they didn't have at the last show, and he specifically held it for him, and we bought that from him. That's a cool thing. You know, that's part of the community. That's part of fun. It was a $450 box that we got about $18 worth of cards out of, but that's the risk you take, I guess, right? And I'm the idiot for spending $450 on a box of cards. My fault. But I know going in that that's the likely outcome. Do you guys know that that's a likely outcome? Do you know the likely outcome of spending $2,000 on a quarterback that came out in the last 2 years is that $2,000 is probably going to be worth $500 in the middle of the season? If you don't, take a look at what's happened those last couple of quarterback years. Take a look at what's happened to LaMelo Ball's pricing if you are a basketball guy. And as good as Ja Morant is, where is he? I don't know. Shohei was almost like can't miss. That was like the safest bet in baseball cards. Get it? If you don't, I'll translate it for you. Even Ohtani. It's an interesting thing, because I got to tell you, what drew me and probably a lot of people like me back in during COVID was when I collected in the 80s and the 90s, it was a lot more pure than it is now. I know that sounds stupid. It sounds like trying to make an argument that the basketball players of the 90s would be able to compete with the players now. The cards were not as good. The cards were not as flashy. The cards were not as shiny. The cards were not as numbered and... But because they weren't, I was looking for the cards of the guys that I liked. I was looking to build a set. I was looking to complete a whole set of cards. I was looking for Drew Bledsoe cards because that was going to be my guy. I was opening packs of cards because I liked the way the cards looked. Very rarely did I go to a card show as a kid saying, I'm going to buy this card now, because I want to bring it to a show in a month or two and sell it for more. And because of that, those cards that I enjoyed as a kid have a nostalgic draw to me now. I want to own those cards. Not because I want to own them and buy them and flip them. And I will tell you, the Don Mattingly 1984 Donruss rookie that I bought coming back in for less than $1,000 is now a $3,000 or $4,000 card. I don't know exactly because I don't look, but I know it's at least three. And the Ken Griffey Jr. 89 Upper Deck card, while it's not $3,000 or $4,000 like it was in the craziness, it's definitely more than the $400 that I paid for it when I came back in. And that's an interesting thing to think about. Those cards that people aren't buying to flip over and over again, the cards that people are buying to hold, even the high pop ones, they end up going up in value because they're the ones that end up in forever homes. They're the ones that people are buying not to, you know, prop back up and bring to the next show and post on their story page. And I'll tell you, I put my money where my mouth is, because I collected in the 80s and early 90s. And no, I wasn't a Jordan collector. Hell, in New York, it was very hard to like Michael Jordan. You can appreciate his greatness, but it's very hard to cheer for him because, man, did he just whip the Knicks' ass every single time. Anyway, I was a Griffey guy and I was a Shaq guy as a kid. A month ago, I owned two. I have a bunch of Griffey cards that are smaller cards, hot glove, you name it. I don't consider that part of my like core when we talk about like, you know, high-level cards. I own two four-figure cards of each one of those guys. Okay. On the Shaq, I had a PMG. And on the Griffey, I had a Rubies. Skybox Rubies. I also owned an 89 Upper Deck PSA 10 of Griffey and a 92 Upper Deck, card number one of both of those guys, of Shaq, where, you know, the three greatest dunks. Well, as I sit here today, I only own the Upper Decks of each one of them. Those other two cards are gone. And you know what? Maybe those are good cards. Maybe those are cards that somebody else will chase down the road. But I didn't buy those cards because they were some allure to me of yesteryear. I was in college when those cards came out, almost done with college when those cards came out. Those were not cards that I, as a kid, went to shows trying to get. Those were not cards I was chasing out of packs. The Upper Deck ones were. So to me, I get more enjoyment out of owning those two cards than I did out of the ones that are worth 20 times the value. So I sold the big ones. And I'll use that money to buy other cards like it that I have some nostalgia for. I have some pullback to where I collected. Tony Gwynn, 83 tops. I'll try to buy one of those, PSA 10. Maybe a 84 Marino rookie. Maybe I'll get one with a 10 with a 10 auto on it. It's only one of those. I think Mark Nader has it. How much do I have to pay you, Mark? Anyway, point being, a lot of people have asked me to be positive. A lot of people have asked me to kind of, you know, hey, come on, you're being dark. I'm not being dark. Trust me, I'm not. I plan on continuing to buy cards. I spent a lot of money this past weekend. Bought boxes of cards to open with Ian. Saw some cool basketball cards that I bought. $15, $20. Fun. But I'm still selling. Because I don't see a future for a lot of these cards. And the future I do see is not a good one. So I don't know who's chasing these things. And does that fly in the face of the, wow, look at that Shaq PMG that just sold for all that money. It sure does. Something's a little fishy there. That Jordan that's over so much money. Well, the people who post those things, they probably have a vested interest in posting them. They probably have one similar. That's sort of like the last ditch effort to kind of save that one little corner of the space. Anyway, that's just my take. Find something here that you actually enjoy. It doesn't have to be expensive. As a matter of fact, let's do it together. Close your eyes for a second. Think back to when you were a kid and collected, if you collected as a kid. Try to remember opening a pack. What pack is it? Is it an 85 tops pack? Is it an 89 upper deck pack? Is it a pack of hockey cards? Is it a 93 SP baseball? Now think about when you were opening that pack. What were you hoping was in that pack? Was it the Shaq upper deck? Are you remembering sitting at McDonald's in 1992 as a kid, opening an upper deck McDonald's pack and hoping that you got one of those 50 cards and the future, the last five cards, you got a Shaq in there, maybe Michael Jordan. Whatever the card came to your mind there, that's what you buy. Because if you're thinking it, I guarantee there's other people thinking it too. And if there's other people thinking it too, that's the kind of card that someone's eventually going to buy for their own collection. Because it's something that makes their inner collector smile. Something that they wanted. It's something that brings them back to a place where there was something a little more pure about this than what we see today. And you're going to be happier owning that card than picking the right RPA at this month's show that you can sell for $100 or $200 more 2 months from now. You're going to be happier owning that card. You're going to make the hobby a little bit better for yourself. If you find that card, it's going to make you feel better in here. That's what my collection is down to now. My Billy Ripken FF on the bat knob error card. My Griffey, my Shaq, my Don Mattingly. Cards that the younger version of Cage always wanted, didn't have, had to chase, traded away. I'm trying to build a collection now that the kid version of me who collected way back then would be proud of. Maybe you should do the same. Take care, everybody.